All right. Well, Kufar Akbar, welcome everybody to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent discussion group. We are here on the Global Patriot Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're also live streaming here on YouTube, where most of you are watching this evening. Okay, so tonight we're going to be discussing on this occasion of our final pullout from Afghanistan. I thought we should discuss a little bit what got us there in the first place, and then get into why we left and how we left and why this is really going to cost us in the future. And when we look at why we went there, of course, we all know, I believe majority of us, Issa, are you there? Can you come up on mic real quick? I want to test your temperature, young man. Issa Kabir, are you there, sir? He's probably not there. Okay. Most of us remember September 11th, 2001. We remember that morning very well. You know, one of the things that you always can, when you'd have like these markers in history, you can always ask somebody, where were you? And for our generation is, where were you when you heard about 9/11 or when you heard about those planes flying into the Twin Towers? You ask my parents' generation, you always ask them, where were you when you heard that Kennedy was shot? And they'll be able to tell you exactly where they were. And you ask my grandparents or that generation, where were you when you heard that Pearl Harbor had been bombed? And that's just kind of a marker in history. Everybody remembers that. Most people, like myself, remember exactly what they were doing and a lot of the details that go along with that morning. But that's when the United States got into Afghanistan. That was 20 years ago. They called it Operation Enduring Freedom. And the freedom that was to be enduring or going after was, of course, the freedom of the Afghan people. And that extended into OIF, which was Operation Iraqi Freedom. And that was part of that overall, what they call GWAT, the global war on terrorism. Well, now all that is behind us. As of yesterday, as a matter of fact, our last aircraft with that division commander from the 82nd Airborne Division, Hua, out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina, him and the AMBO ambassador for Afghanistan flew out. And what a 20 years that has been, if we think back at some of the major operations that have occurred in there and some of the catastrophes that we've gone up in the morning and we've read about. It's really sad. It's kind of a long list of a litany of sad things happening. We can never forget that SEAL team their Chinook was shot out of the air and it killed over 20 people, or I'm not exactly sure how many people it was, or there was another one that was after they killed Bin Laden. I can't remember the name of Extortion 17. Again, dozens of people, over a dozen, two dozen people killed in one day. So we have all kinds of tragedies that occurred there, and what benefit has this given our country? Well, when we look at what happened on September 11th, has that happened in our country since then? Or has anything even close to that happened in our country since then? Did we indeed achieve the mission of taking away the home field advantage, if you will, of being able to plan, train for, and execute terrorist missions like that? And I think the obvious answer is no. They have not been able to do it, and we did in fact take that away. So does that mean that they have that back now? Well, according to some of the reports, the Taliban 2.0 is a much gentler and kinder Taliban, even though they still do kill people for apostasy, still do stone people to death, still do beat people for things that we here in the West would think that would be unconscionable to do to people. So I would say no, but then again, we have differing opinions on that. I just want to briefly touch on a brief history of Afghanistan. And I'm not going to go back to Alexander the Great or the Greek Empire, or the Roman Empire. I'm not going to go that far back. But there were a couple things that I did think that were, that we did need to touch on. And we go clear back to 1979. I mean, this is where Afghanistan was actually put in the condition that it was, that we found it in 2001. Because prior to that, of course, there was a civil war there, and the civil war I think Pakistan was involved in that somehow. I'm willing to be wrong about that, but the Pakistanis recognized one side and the other side didn't recognize, and there's a civil war. But then the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. Was it Christmas Day 1979 or Christmas Eve or something along those lines? And this is what caused Jimmy Carter was president at that time. Oh my goodness, now we're going back to Iran also, because we had those hostages taken, was it 52 hostages taken for 444 days? So this is that time period that we're talking about.
And Joe Biden is Jimmy Carter 2.0 on steroids.
That's a valid assessment, Rad. I would agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. But when the Russians invaded Afghanistan, as a matter of fact, when I was in basic training, we used to sing a cadence about that. Russians invaded Afghanistan. Anyway, I'm not going to sing it for you, but that was one of the things that that we would sing, because it was a very memorable moment for the military, our U.S. military at that time, because they start with Iran and then goes to the Russians invading to Afghanistan. And they were there for close to 10 years. For them, it was a very brutal war. But the thing with the Russians, their problem was, is that this RCIA gave the Mujahideen, the freedom fighters, quote unquote, the freedom fighters, Stinger missiles. Oops, I hate it when that happens. So the ability for the Russians, and this is one of the key elements of fire and maneuver today, is, you know, the warfare today is three-dimensional. It's not two-dimensional. And in order to be three-dimensional, you have to be able to put aircraft in the sky and fly. You have to be able to maneuver troops vertically and then horizontally using rotary-wing aircraft. The problem with that for the Russians was the fact that that was taken away, because we took away we gave the Mujahideen the Stinger missiles to take out those rotary-wing aircraft, and it got to the point where the Russian pilots were actually afraid to fly. They were, and you can't really blame them, because, you know, with the Stinger missile, you know, the thing that the old saying goes is, if it flies, it dies, and it truly does, because the only thing you have to do is just get that tone on that heat signature, pull the trigger, drop the thing, and you're gone. You don't even have to stay around to watch the light show. So the Russians end up leaving Afghanistan, and just like anything else, when the governing authority leaves, what does that create? Well, that creates a vacuum, a power vacuum. And this created a power vacuum of biblical proportions. And it allowed the people who were with the Taliban and other organizations like them to gain power. And it allowed groups, terrorist groups, groups that were who did not have the West's best interest, hated the West, to live in their country, to train in their country, and to do it unfettered, without worrying about being persecuted, prosecuted, or anything for it. And this is what eventually led to Osama bin Laden, who was part of that Mujahideen Corps in the 1980s, residing in Afghanistan and being able to launch that attack on us. So that's the kind of the history that goes with Afghanistan. But my concern now, and I think it's probably everybody on this panel, is what happens now? what happens in Afghanistan now? Are these same people that we threw out in 2001, now that they're back in power, are they going to allow those same things to occur in their country, ISIS-K, whatever that means, and Al-Qaeda, and whatever that constitutes now, are they going to allow them to reign free in that country? Are they going to give them protection? Remains to be seen. But the thing that's the scariest about this whole component is that we have hundreds, nobody can give us an exact amount, but we literally have hundreds of American citizens that are still in Afghanistan. The idea of removing the only protection that these people could have had without getting them out first is unconscionable. Care less what Biden said today in his press conference. We're going to hunt you down. Sure you are. If you were truly interested in hunting these people down, you would have kept Bagram open, and you would have been able to extract Americans, get them out first, and then you pull the military out. You don't pull the military out, then try to get civilians out. That's just, I don't know who provided him that guidance. I don't know who gave him that type of advice and said that this is okay. This is the way that we can do it. But whoever that was, they need to be, and if any harm comes, they need to be fired, number one. But if any harm comes to those people, they need to be prosecuted. This is negligence of the first degree. Who in their right mind leaves citizens of their own country behind enemy lines in the middle of a war? I don't know.
Not only that, but so I was listening to, I've been following this very closely. So for those of you who don't know, what Trump was pulling out, okay? Now you can argue, should we have pulled out, should we have stayed, whatever. Ben Shapiro makes a great, I'm for totally pulling out, because I'm going to play a video later on if we have time to show you why. I mean, these people, there was no training these people. But Ben Shapiro does make a good case where he says, so we could have stayed in with a few thousand troops, maintain the air base, and maintain the close air support, the intelligence, and all that good stuff. And we could have just kept the Taliban at bay forever if they didn't think need be. Okay? But anyway, the Trump plan was to keep the air base, okay, and start evacuating the citizens. Well, Biden takes over, okay? And Biden gives the commanders a number of 600 troops, okay? So you guys have 600 troops. Do you want to keep the Bagram Air Base, or do you want to defend the embassy? So the commanders are like, these are our options. We can't get any more troops. He said, no. So they decide to go with the embassy. Now, here's the really, really bad part, okay? When the Taliban surrounded Kabul, they had no intention of going in. This is well documented now. Okay? I don't know if any of you guys know this, but they had no intention of going in because there was supposed to be a peaceful transition of power between the president at that time of Afghanistan and the Taliban. Well, the president, I would say, smartly so, fled the country with a couple sacks full, I think it's like $150 million of American cash, okay? Great, right? You know what I mean? Not only that, okay, but of course, the entire government fled. Police didn't show up, there was a total shutdown, and then there was rioting, looting, and all this other stuff. Well, the Taliban, smarter than our military, actually, gotta give them kudos where kudos is done. They went to the U.S. and they said, look, you guys, we'll let you guys police the city while you get your people out. You can have the city until August 31st, okay? And we'll let you police the city. Just don't let them loot and destroy and burn. And our commander said, no, we don't need that. You can have the city. We just need the airport. Does that make sense to you there?
No. Eric? No. And here's – go ahead.
No.
And the reason why it makes zero sense is because if – okay, if you look where Bagram Air Base was located, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's easily defendable. You do not have an urban city. I mean, you're not. It's not in the middle of the city. You have at least two runways. You have access to all kinds of facilities. They had a hospital there. They had that prison there, full of all those jihadis. To leave that in the middle of the night like they did, and to go to Kabul where you're crowded and you do not have the perimeter, you do not have control of the thing with Bagram is that it's so remote that you cannot get cells within a perimeter shot to where they could lob mortars in on the runway. That's always a major concern, because if you can get a mortar to land on that runway and you blow a hole in that runway or create some instability there, you're not going to get a C-17 to be able to land in that or to take off in that. You need to have a flat surface for these things to land and take off in. Bagram provided that. And then to trap yourself into an airport inside of a city where you have limited defensibility within its perimeter is just, I don't know who, I wasn't a planner or anything, wazoo like that, where you make plans, on how to set up perimeter. I know how to do perimeter defense. But what I do know is that you need to have that perimeter spread out, and you have to have observable fields of fire. You have to be able to see where your enemy is. You cannot see inside of a city. Why? Because there's too many buildings and too many places to hide. Bagram was that ideal place for it. And to let that go when they did, is just, I mean, that's a court-martial of offense, be that stupid. Or at least be relieved from duty, at a minimum.
Not only that, but they did it in the middle of the night, and they did not tell our NATO allies.
Right.
There was actually flights coming in from the UK, I believe, that were expecting to land at Bagram, and all of a sudden the tower was dead. They could not raise the tower. And then they were told to divert to someplace else. I think they had to divert to another country. Because they couldn't land at the airbase. But anyway, so you have that going on, the total blunder. Taliban actually says you can have Kabul to evacuate your people and maintain security. By that time, they had 6,000 troops. So, yeah, we could have provided security. And it would have went a lot smoother, I think, in my opinion, because we could have got everybody out, shot anybody else that was looting on the way out. You know what I mean? Whatever. Could have got everybody out, lickety-split. Instead, they said, no. You go ahead. So now we're asking the terrorists to police the city and provide security for us. That actually makes no sense. Okay.
The general, what's his name, McKenzie or whatever his nuts was yesterday. It's almost like he's bragging about setting up agreements with the Taliban. Right. I mean, we made an agreement with the Taliban, and they agreed to provide security and control access in and out of the general, what are you thinking about? These are the same guys that we kicked out. We went in and kicked them out of the country 20 years ago, and now you're making deals with them because they're not ISIS-K and they're not Al-Qaeda? Really? Again, poster child for being relieved from command for being stupid. That has got to be about the dumbest. And he's in on this, and he was in on the decision-making process too, to shut Bagram. The whole thing is just one great big, forgive my language, but just one great big shit show is what it is. And at their creation, because what you're going to do is you're going to talk about what Trump's policy was. And in order to meet a deadline, the September 11th deadline for our pullout, the Taliban or the coalition government that was supposed to come together had to meet certain metrics. They had to meet certain steps along the way. They had to establish X, Y, and Z. If they did not, then that deadline was going to be pushed out. That's the way you should have done it. But they didn't meet any of those metrics. They just said, we're going to get out of here at all costs.
Another thing, Biden keeps saying, I was confronted with a choice. My predecessor gave us a May 1st deadline. Okay,
right.
Well, you got a May 1st deadline, but you extended it then to September 11th and then knocked it down to August 31st arbitrarily. So wait a minute. So you could extend it from May 1st, but you couldn't extend it past that? Not only that, but he made no effort to get these people out. As a matter of fact, he did the opposite. Remember, he said in a speech, okay, all right, no, there is no chance that the Taliban are going to take over. There's no chance that this is going to turn into a Saigon event. There's absolutely no, I have confidence in the 300,000 well-trained, well-equipped Taliban, or not Taliban, Afghani National Army and Security Force. They're going to fight, blah, blah. So you're telling these American citizens, okay, they're going to fight, we'll stick around, we'll see what's going to happen, instead of evacuating them out. And then he says, well, if we would have started evacuating them out, we would have caused a panic. Hello, you had a panic.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you have that one general, Milli Vanilli, dude. That's what I call him, Milli Vanilli, dude. He, I don't know what his deal is, but when the guy sits there and says that we were given three scenarios by the intelligence, one was that it would collapse in a couple of weeks, okay? Another one, it would be, you know, months. Another one would be, you know, it would be a year. Okay, your experience, which one did you recommend, General Milli Vanilli? That's what I want to know. Okay, did you recommend the one that was that said it was going to collapse in a couple of weeks, or did you recommend the other one? Because the recommend, in my opinion, the recommendation that you would make as a general with your years of experience, especially he was one of the Afghan trainers or in charge of training the Afghan forces for a few years, right? So he was in country with his years of experience, knowing the situation on the ground, which one would he have recommended? You know what I mean? But then he says, you know, one that was going to take a couple, that they were going to collapse in a couple weeks, but none of them said it was going to collapse in 11 days.
Right.
What the hell, dude? So they took 2 weeks, so they got it wrong by 4 days? You know what I mean? How is that an excuse for you not recommending the one that said it was going to take 2 weeks? I'm sorry, this was just an epic failure. But they're spinning it as Joe Biden's greatest moment. It's his Dunkirk moment. It's his Berlin airport moment. Atlantic Journal or the Atlantic Monthly said he should be praised. Only he has the political courage. You know, only he could do this. You know, it's just completely ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw that you posted in that link, that chat link that we're in. Yeah.
One more thing, and I'll let you continue. I'm sorry, I'll let you continue. Starting to take over the modest man in your show. But, do you guys know that they knew? Okay, this is leaked. Okay, from the Pentagon. So somebody in there is leaking to the press. Okay. Leaked to the press, the Washington Post, I believe. Yeah, WAPU actually reported, maybe the New York Times, from the Pentagon. On the day before the attack that killed those 13 servicemen, mostly Marines and one Army guy and a Navy foreman, okay? It was a high warning. I mean, they knew. They actually knew it was going to be at the Able Gate. They actually knew it was going to be late afternoon. So they had the timeline. They had the date. They had the actual target. Okay? All right? There's actually, in the call notes, you know, they're you know, what's the name? Milli Vanilli and Lloyd, yeah, what's his name? Lloyd Austin.
Oh, the SecDef, yeah.
Yeah, Austin Powers and a couple others. They were like, you know, they were really concerned. They're like, you know, we need to take this serious, you know, but Navy SEAL and CIA are telling us this or whatever, whoever the information was coming from. So they were definitely... They ordered the gate, the Able Gate, closed by noon Afghan time. But they kept the gate open. So somebody on the ground made the decision to keep that gate open. Because evidently, according to call notes, that was a direct order to close the gate by noon. And they actually got back on the phone and they got the reports where they were like, why is the gate still open? And their excuse was that the Brits had speeded up their evacuation. So they were keeping the gate open so the Brits could get their people out through the Able Gate, right? And the Brits are saying, no, if you would have told us to shut it down, we would have shut it down. We would have waited, you know, because they were all in the hotel, so they were perfectly safe. That was no problem. Oh, and that's another thing. Why did the Brits have the hotel? I mean, seriously, man. I mean, the whole thing, we had no plans. The Brits are going out getting their own people. The Germans are going out getting their own people. But we're sitting there behind the wall. I mean, the whole thing was just a cluster. But no, somebody on that ground made that decision to keep that gate open. And I think it was 4 p.m. or whatever, it was too late. The bomb went off and then killed a bunch of people. And, that was,
Yeah, I would like to know. I would like to know when exactly did you have, when did the Taliban start rapidly taking over sections of the country, this rapid advance, and correlate that to the closing of Bagram? Because I bet, I would be willing to bet that the confidence in any type of American involvement and support, Afghan government, for a coalition government to be set up, collapsed when that happened.
I think Hannity has a timeline on that. He's got a map where he shows it. But I think it started out right when Biden took office, I believe. Started in February. Like, no, I'm serious. They started to advance. And remember, part of the Trump plan was seriously to them. The Taliban could not attack or take over any of the regional capitals. I mean, that was a deal breaker right there. Okay, that was honestly walk away if they did that. But as soon as Biden started to take over, and I think it was February, March, they started to do that. They started to take over, outlying areas. Okay, nobody would pay attention to. But after they closed that airbase, you're right. Everybody started. I mean, that's when they're like.
Yeah. I mean, that's when the president left. That's when when your president leaves. That's a good indication to put your gun down and go home.
Right. Mhm. Exactly. Oh, and they were making deals. Leave the equipment intact and we'll spare your life. So they left all that equipment intact. And like I said, my dad when he was in Korea, he told me when he had to retreat. They destroyed all their heavy equipment they couldn't move. I mean, they blew up cannon,
I know they made a point. They made a point. The CENTCOM commander, McKenzie, made a point to tell everybody that all the equipment that was left at the Kabul airport, the MRATs, the Humvees, all of those things were, and the aircraft, the U.S. aircraft that there were rendered non-mission capable, or they destroyed. They would never be able to be used again. The other equipment was supposed to be for the Afghani army. So when we start talking about, we had $85 billion worth of equipment that we left there. Well, that was for the Afghani army. It wasn't, we didn't intend, you don't want to destroy, equipment that you're giving to the army that you're supposed to be supporting. So
I'm saying this Afghani army, the one that was well-equipped, well-trained, okay, by American forces, and they were going to stand and fight. Okay, if you're retreating and you're bugging out, you still destroy the equipment. They didn't do that. They bargained the equipment for their lives, and unfortunately, it looks like that's not working out too well for them, because reports are coming out that they're hunting these dudes down and killing them anyway, at least the commanders are. The commanders are being killed.
They're killing who? Would you say?
They're killing Afghani Army commander.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's going to happen. I mean, they have the face recognition equipment to nail all of that. And they have the names, for crying out loud. And that was another thing. Who gives them, hey, can you let these people in? These are American citizens trapped in your country. Oh, terrorist organization that you're back in control. Can you imagine being the person at the State Department that did that and being in the meeting? Oh my gosh! They're gonna look at you. Everybody's. I mean, when you go to the next meeting, people are going to go in.
Definitely the Biden administration. They're being applauded for that. That's a good idea. Now, here's the funny thing on that, Eric. Here's the flip side of this, and nobody's catching this. So here's basically how this worked. They gave the names to some corrupt Taliban commanders, and they gave them a bag of cash with it. You know what I mean? Always the bag of cash
right.
with the name. Okay. So they gave them a bag of cash. And they said, "Hey, let these people." Now, I haven't heard. Well, no, actually, I have heard some instances where. Well, we've heard a lot of instances where Americans haven't been let through, or visa holders or passport holders haven't been let through, right? Because I don't know if any of them were the ones that they were given the names of. Okay, so maybe those people, because they put them on buses, and maybe those people, the buses did get through. But again, remember, these are corrupt local commanders. Okay, they're not there all the time. Okay. So the bus shows up, and there's a non-corrupt commander, nobody who's not in on the scheme, okay, he hasn't got his bag of cash, American passport, even though you got a green card, even though you got an SIV, if it's not on the guest list, if you go to any club that is, you know, VIP, right, and your name, it doesn't matter how much flash you got, it doesn't matter who you are, if your name is not on that guest list, are you getting in the club? No. So here's the flip side of this. This actually caused more harm than it did good. Because why? Because there were a lot of people that were not on that special VIP list, right? So they're going up, they're trying to get through, and the Taliban's like, you're not on the list, sorry, come back another time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that caused all kinds. That's the flip side. That's the real seriousness of giving out the names on the list. And not only that, but they gave, did you hear about the American school?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can complete your degree online. Yeah. We'll make sure that we.
There's the women's section, the women's college, I believe. Okay.
This is. Are you talking? You're talking about the American University there in Kabul.
American University. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So these are the professors. These are the women students. These are the let's face it. These are the upper middle class or upper class of the Afghan people. Okay, to go to this American university, okay? All right? So the United States of America finally says, okay, we're going to let you in. Here's what you do. Get on these buses that we supply. And they drive them all around Kabul, trying to get through various checkpoints. This is the day before. I think the day before we finally pulled out. Okay, they're on the last flight, man. They're on that last train to Clarksville. And ain't nobody going to meet them at the station here. Anyway. So they're driving them all around. You guys don't get, come on, none of you guys watch The Monkey? Oh, wait.
Hey, it's The Monkey. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I watch it, though.
I don't know, anyway. But anyway, no.
Hey, with the monkeys. Monkey around.
Buses was this? I thought I heard it's like seven. Yeah, seven buses or something like that of women. McKinsey made a point of yesterday is that he said that when the commanding general, the two-star out of Bragg, and the ambassador went wheels up, the policy was is that they were still going to take anybody and everybody that they could that qualified onto that last plane. That was what was supposed to be happen. But when you go back and you follow the timeline, these women showed up hours. I mean, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 hours before that last one. They should have been able to get on there. So this division commander needs to be relieved of his command too, because this whole thing needs to be investigated, and people need to be I saw that lieutenant colonel, that marine lieutenant colonel whatever his name is, this is what had him so ticked off. This is why he made that YouTube video calling the chain of command out. He says, look, as a battalion commander, there are so many things that I can get burned for. that if I allow happen in my command. And he brought up just like something as, I don't want to say it's simple, but something as easily defensible as an equal opportunity complaint. One equal opportunity complaint against a battalion commander within his command, not necessarily against him, but within his command, can cause him to get relieved. Because what they are doing, they are responsible for fostering the command climate within their command. And so
can you repeat that? Equal opportunity?
Some guy who's gay. Let's put it out there. Let's say some guy is gay, and you allow people within your command to continually harass this guy for being gay. So what you're doing, instead of punishing those people for harassing this guy for being gay, because this is the climate in the military today. I mean, dudes can marry dudes in the army today, for crying out loud. If you allow that to happen. And you do not get involved as a commander to put a stop to that. And this person files in what they call an EO complaint. And I'm just using the example that he used, okay? If they file an EO complaint against you as the commander or against these people, and it is found out during the investigation by the AG or IG that you did not do anything about it and you knew about it, you can get relieved as a battalion commander. Just something as simple as that. Not that I'm saying that it's simple that, you know, you would allow people to harass homosexuals within your command. Is I'm not trying to mitigate that or minimize that. But what I'm saying is that just something that simple can get you relieved from command. That simple. What his point was, is he's saying, look, you have something that is exponentially more severe than this, exponentially more stupid. Closing Bagram. Where's the accountability for the chain of command? Where is the, not only at the one star, two star level, we're talking at the SYNC level, at the CENTCOM level, at the four star General Kinsey level. We're talking about at the Secretary of the Army, Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's saying, where is the accountability for these guys when they're providing this advice for the president? There is none. Pointing that out, they relieved him as a command. Now, I'll tell you why they relieved him as a command. Because you just don't do that as an officer. You do not criticize the chain of command publicly like that and humiliate them publicly. So when they relieved him of his command, I get it. That's the right thing to do. You just don't allow somebody, a subordinate, to do that. You can't allow that. You can't allow that to happen if you're going to have a United States Army. Now, if you want something like the Salvation Army or if you want something like the Taliban, well, that goes on all the time. But you cannot allow that to happen in the United States Army. So I get that.
What does that mean to be relieved of command? Because, no, he actually knew that was going to happen to him. He actually said, I'm going to be relieved of command.
He said he would be relieved command if he posted that. And he didn't know at the time he was making it. It wasn't a live stream. He ended up uploading it, though. That's on him. When you are relieved to command, you are removed from being the commander of that battalion, of that unit. It's an 05 billet. You have four or five companies underneath you. Each company has about 200 men. It's about 1,000 men is how many people you're in charge of.
Is he still getting paid? I mean, he's not really.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm getting to that. You're still getting paid. You're just reassigned into some type of administrative position. They'll probably send you to the Pentagon in the basement filing off, I don't know, writing war plans or whatever.
He could have still finished out his 3 years with rank, scrubbing toilets, right? I mean, if they wanted.
Let me get to that. When you do something like this, this is what, and I think he saw the writing on the wall. This is gross insubordination, is what it was. So he knew one of two things. Number one, he would be under investigation and that he would be disciplined, he would have been disciplined. And that discipline could have resulted, it wouldn't have resulted in a dishonorable discharge or a court's martial, it could have resulted in a court's martial, I guess. But that said, it would have been, it probably would have been handled administratively. It wouldn't have been taken into, let's say, a courts martial or into an Article 31 hearing where, you know, you're going to investigate this and then you're going to bring charges against the officer and then you're going to put him on trial and send him to prison. You're not going to send somebody like that to Leavenworth for saying those type of things. So the last three... That's what I'm getting to. If it would have gone to a courts martial, he could have been reduced in rank. He could have been fined, lost pay. But I don't believe that he would have been discharged, meaning that he would have been kicked out of the service for it. He might have. What?
Well, supposedly what he's done now is he submitted his papers. Okay. And he said, no, I'm giving up my retirement. But he's got 17 years, so he gets something, right?
No, you don't get anything. You got to get at least 20 years of active federal service in order to qualify retirement. You got to have 20 years of active federal service. Absolutely.
I thought you get something at 10, something at 15. No, nothing.
No, not a dime. You got to do 20.
No, that's what he said. No.
But here's another thing. This is gonna scare you too. If you have. And then this has been written into law. If you have 17 years, 9 months active federal service as of the date that charges are brought against you, unless it's a criminal charge, you cannot be administratively moved from the service until you hit your 20-year mark. So they have to allow you to retire at 20. They have to allow you to serve those last 2 years, 3 months. So if you got 17-9, you're good. So he might not have had 17-9. I don't know.
I don't know. No, that's another thing. Okay, so when you get up in rank like that in service, you can just for instance, so let's say I was 18 again, and I actually successfully enrolled in the military, and I didn't like it after a year and a half. I said I want to go home. I could not go home, right? But evidently from what I'm understanding of this, okay. The dude submitted his papers, so he's gone, right? I mean, it's just like a regular job now. It's a regular retirement. Or does that come with rank? Or does that come with time? Or, I mean, you know what I mean? You see what I'm saying? Or can they just keep him in? Like, because every year, every 4 years or whatever, you got to re-enlist, right? I assume.
Right.
Okay? Under contract. So if he says, I'm submitting my papers to get out, I'm resigning my command, resigning my commission. Can they still keep him in as a private and just give him hell for the next, for whatever term he has left on his contract? Or is it pretty much they're done? They're going to let him out. You see what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, and there's an easy answer for that. Is yes, he can do that as an officer. You receive a commission from the President of the United States, and. Let's say, and there are different ways that you can be commissioned. Some people go to West Point, and after 4 years at West Point, they receive a commission from the president. Some people go through ROTC, and after they graduate from college, they receive a commission from the President of the United States. Or some people go through OCS, Officer Candidate School, and they receive a commission at the conclusion of that. After you receive that commission, by going to West Point, you incur what they call it, some type of service obligation. You incur a service obligation, meaning that you have to serve a minimum of West Point. I think it's 6 years, whether that's inactive or reserve or active duty. Same thing with ROTC. You have to serve a minimum of 6 years, partly active, part in our reserve. Same thing with OCS. Once you complete that service obligation, if you want to resign your commission, you can resign your commission at any time and take a walk. However, the difference is, as an enlisted soldier, you are enlisting for a set period of time. Now, the way that they had it set up when I left, I don't know if it's true today, but anybody that was a staff sergeant or above, when you reenlisted after 10 years, it took you up to what they call a retention control point, meaning that for a staff sergeant, you do 20. If you don't get promoted to E7 by 20 years, you have to go. a sergeant first class in E7. I think it was 24 years. If you don't make E8 by 24 years, you got to go. E8, it was 26 or 28 years. I can't remember. And so on and so forth. But you could, after you reach that 20-year mark and you reach retirement eligibility, as long as you're not on a deployment or something, you can go too. So things have changed, but as far as what that guy did is resigning his commission, he can immediately leave the service.
So because he hasn't done that.
Okay. What's that?
Well, he's gonna be a politician. You watch, he's gonna be elected office. No, he's gonna be fine. As you said, I look forward to my next adventure. From going from learning to kill in hand to hand combat, I like that point, to doing something else. So no, he's gonna be fine. He made a calculated decision. I think actually the military was right for doing what they did because you can't have that. I mean, I don't fault them for that. Okay? But this is getting back to my point, though, on this. Okay? What could these generals, okay, if they were honorable men, they go to the president, they say, listen, we need at least 4,000 troops. You can't reduce this down to 600. Okay? All right? No, they had 2,500 troops. Well, we need these 2,500 troops. You can't reduce this down to 600 to keep Bagram and, okay? And President says, well, I'm sorry, former President Biden says, no, you get 600, you do.
Mm-hmm.
What could they have done? I mean, he's the commander-in-chief. You know what I mean? Commander-in-chief, I should say, but go ahead.
Well, you can say, okay, well, then you find another commander. That's right. Well, no. You say you find another commander because I'm going to resign my command here. Commanders can do that too. They can resign their command. They said, look, I don't want to command anymore. Your career is over when you do that, but you're not going to be forced out of the military. You're not going to face any type of charges at all. You're not going to be called you're not going to be brought up, for insubordination or any of that like. But you can. You can.
So you get all your benefits, you get everything.
Absolutely.
A discharge, and you're done, you can move on to the next point. That's the point I'm trying to make with this, what was he, a major, I think, right? The guy that did this?
He's a lieutenant colonel, 05. He was an 05. Major's 04.
Oh, lieutenant colonel.
Correct.
This is higher than a major, right? Right.
Yeah, your major's an 04, lieutenant colonel's an 05, captain's an 03.
Yeah. Okay, so... So, no, he did the honorable thing there. He's like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, this is where, I would disagree. I think he did what he thought was right. I don't think him going public like that was the right thing to do. These types of things you go public afterwards. You say, okay, this is why we have a chain of command. This is why we take orders in the Army. You do what the heck you're told. Because if you start second guessing your chain of command every time you turn around, you don't have an Army. Okay, you have to have people that take orders. However, if you are in a battalion commander, if you're a battalion commander and you have that type of responsibility for people in theater, like he did, and you feel that you cannot perform that mission adequately with the number of soldiers that you have, you felt like you've been dealt this crappy hand like they handed him, maybe the only thing he thought he had left to do was to say, hey, look, guys, you're forcing an impossible mission upon me, and you expect me to perform something, and who's going to be left holding the bag at the end of the day, me or you? You obviously have demonstrated that you're not willing to hold the bag, take any type of responsibility. And that was his whole complaint about this. You people are the ones that are refusing to take any responsibility, and you're putting the whole onus on, low-ranking officers like myself. And I don't know, 05 is a low-ranking officer, but, in the big mix of things, when you got an 08, 09 there, the four-star general telling you that this is what you're going to do.
So you're who's telling?
Right. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That would have been perfectly legitimate to do that. Well, I don't know about going public. There is a clause where officers are not allowed to criticize the civilian. How does this go? They're not allowed to criticize civilian leadership while they're on active duty.
Right.
This is what this is. Right. This is what got, who was that four-star? He was a four-star general in Afghanistan at the time of Obama, McChrystal, when he got the boot. He was, and it was also, this is where the phrase bite came out for Biden when they were talking about the vice president saying anything. The staff is like, oh, you mean, you know, they were talking freely to the press about this and saying, oh yeah, you mean bite me? When they say Biden, you know, this is what, this is what caused him to get forced out, is because you just don't. And this is, you know, you think of Douglas MacArthur, for crying out loud. You go clear back to the Korean War, right? Yeah, he got fired. Why? Because you second guessed the chain of command as an officer, and you publicly criticized the civilian chain of command. This is why we have a civilian chain of command in the United States, is because we're not a banana republic. We don't allow our officers, our military, to even think about having some type of authority or reigning some type of authority over the civilian chain of command. This is why we have a Secretary of the Army, who is a civilian. This is why we have a Secretary of Defense, who is a civilian. This is why we have a president as a commander-in-chief, who is a civilian.
When they fired MacArthur, because he was in Korea, he said everybody was just so pissed on the trip when he did it. I don't know why, because MacArthur ignored every warning, everything. But no, MacArthur was talking about nuking China, and he actually had control of the bomb, right? I mean, is that how that went? And then Truman said, no, we're not nuking China, although looking back at that, we probably should have.
Would have been a good idea.
But anyway, right. but no, my dad says, well, my dad, before everything, he's a... Like I said, that, you know, when he was, you know, in the craft, everybody was really, really pissed at Truman. And that's actually why he said he could never vote for a Democrat, because of what Truman did in firing MacArthur. But later in life, he said, you know what, I realized that Truman was right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you could.
Yeah, you just, right. You just cannot have your military people criticizing the commander-in-chief. If you can. If you want to live in a banana republic, it's not a problem. But this, we have a clear chain of command. There's a reason why it's set up to where the president is the commander in chief. Then you have a secretary of war, secretary of defense, and then each branch of service that eventually became a civilian position as the time went on too. Okay, so when we think about, and this is one of those things where we were discussing. Why did this lieutenant colonel say the things that he did and protest as loudly as he did? And it's because the level of frustration had gotten so high for this guy. Because number one, when you're on the ground and you're on a deployment like that, the stress levels are through the roof. I mean, you just don't understand that every waking moment is stressful. In an environment like that. But number two, when you compound that by senior leadership who, because of political reasons, implement policies or trying to implement policies that will directly lessen your effectiveness on the ground by limiting the number of assets or soldiers that you have on the ground, because they want to have an end date set up. And to do it in the middle of the capital of Afghanistan instead of doing it out at Bagram, you know, I can clearly see why this guy did what he did. And, you know, like you said, Rad, this guy, you know, he's gonna have a golden parachute. He's gonna land someplace nice. I mean, if you think about what you get at 20 years of service, I don't know what a 05 makes today. I'm sure it's probably about $8,000 a month in base pay. So for the rest of his life, he would receive 4,000. You know, you get 50% of your, well, I guess under the other retirement system, you get 40%. I'm not sure what they get now, to be honest with you. I get 50% of my base pay at 20 years. For each year after that, you get 2.5%. So I get 52.5% because I went 21. But so that he would get $4,000 a month alone just for his retirement from the Army, and that's not to include any type of VA compensation that somebody like that would probably be entitled to later on down the road.
So you were in the military for 21 years, Eric?
What's that?
You were in the military for 21 years?
Yeah, I was in the Army for 21 years. I retired. Listen to this. You're gonna hate me even more than you do. I retired. I retired when I was 39 years old.
I hate you.
Yeah. I throw my name in that hat.
Yeah.
This guy is, he doesn't like to say this, but this is a real American hero bang stuff. Multiple combat deployments, multiple stuff.
Paid to have, and this is what I always tell people. When you get to jump, when you actually get paid to jump out of aircraft instead of having to pay somebody to let you jump out of aircraft.
That's what I have to do.
Right, and then that's.
But he won't jump me. Eric won't jump me. He's like, no, I'm going to do that again.
Yeah, Trinity put 39. Yeah, true story. I was 39 years old when I retired. I went in when I was 17. I was just a little baby. Yeah. But I did 21.
Yeah, post those pictures, man. No, seriously, you gotta post the picture somewhere. I mean, of your graduation from basic stuff that you showed me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah. I have that somewhere. I'll. You know what? I'll put it up. I'll put it up someplace. But yeah, I mean, I look like I was in maybe a freshman in high school, for crying out loud. I look.
17. A lot of people are still freshmen in high school.
Yeah, because they're not doing anything. Yeah, that's. Yeah, and that's the thing. I have no regrets for staying in because some people they get I went in like most people do at that time just to get the money for college. I wanted I couldn't play basketball well enough to get a scholarship, the bottom line was is that I wasn't really ready to go to college at that time anyway. So I went in and even at the end of the 3 years, by that time I was married and what was I going to do? I was a military policeman. I guess I could have got out and gone into law enforcement. That was the initial plan, but I enjoyed it. I was at Bragg and I was doing all these HUA things and I liked it. So I stayed in, and next thing you know, 21 years rolls around.
21 years later.
Yeah, you say, it's time to go. Let's go do something else. And I have no regrets at all.
He's a military policeman. But no, can I brag about you, Eric?
Not, why? What are you going to say?
Well, okay. No, it's like,
I don't know. What are we going to say?
This is serious. No, when we say jumping on airplanes, we mean attached to 101st Airborne, 82nd Airborne, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jumping out of airplanes in Iraq, chasing down Saddam Hussein, special operations, top secret clearance, all that kind of stuff, providing protection and security for all
Yeah, the 101st. I'm old now. I mean, come on. You say don't mess with Eric. I'm old.
I
appreciate it, but.
No, I told Eric that this is honestly, some of you guys know, I used to hang out with some rough people. I don't anymore because they're either dead or in prison. But no, you can always know. No, you can always know. I mean, seriously, you could be in the roughest bar in any hood in Chicago, but you always knew when the primo walked in. Okay? He was always the quietest. He never bragged, never talked loud, never did anything, but he just commanded respect, okay, when the primo walked in. You always knew who it was. Even if you didn't know who the primo was in this local bar. Okay? Eric's that primo. I mean, you know what I mean? He just commanded. commands that respect. You know what I mean? You know?
Well, I would hope. I would hope that nobody would challenge me on that. Say, hey, we're gonna take you outside. And I'm gonna stay right here and not finish. I'm gonna finish my beer. You can go fight somebody else. Yeah, and the thing is, your body pays the price for that. Trinity says, I look 35. Thank you so much. I'm not even close. Your body just pays the price for that. You know, the knees are shot. My back, I got degenerative disc in my back. You know, I got pins in my actually screws in my ankle from I went in the trees one night and we jumped in. It was just training exercise, nothing too serious. But when going to the trees, number one, you hit every branch. And that doesn't feel very good. But people normally think that you get hung up, and that very rarely happens. And when you come down to land, you're all discombobulated. And I stepped on something because you're supposed to keep your feet and knees together when you land. And I came down on my one foot, and it just twisted that ankle. It had twisted to the point to where it just swelled up like a grape and ripped all those ligaments in there. And this is the true story. I'm not saying how tough I was. I when you walk around Fort Bragg, because I had to put it in a cast because it was sprained really that bad. And when you walk around Fort Bragg in a cast, especially in the division area, everybody calls you a cherry. Now that's the first thing a paratrooper can be called is a cherry. A cherry, somebody who only has five jumps, doesn't know how to jump, landed wrong. Tore up his ankle. They don't care that you went through the trees, okay? They don't care that you walked off the drop zone a mile and a half that night. They don't care about that. All they know is that you got a cast on your foot. So after about 3 days, 4 days of that, I went back to the hospital, and I told the doctor there, I said that my cast, it's rubbing here in the back of my leg. And I can't stand it. Can you take it off and take a look? So he cuts it off, and this is before they had the air cast. Then okay, this is where they had the plaster Paris stuff that stink after about 2-3 days. And he looks at it and he goes, "Well, I don't see anything there, Sarge. We'll just tape it up, put some salve on here, and then you just go back down to casting, get another one put on, and you'll be good to go down to have a new cast pat put on." And I walked out of the hospital, went out to the car, and drove back over to work. And 3 days after, 4 days after that, I was out running on it again. So I basically ruined my ankle because I didn't want to be called names. Like a cherry. Stupid. Yeah, there we go. Here it is. Here's this. Look at it right there. Look what this guy said. Just walk it off, baby. that's what you do. Suck it up, buttercup. Get out of here. Walk it off. You can take it. Be a man about it. Back to where we were. All right, so let's go back to right. And how long are we going to do this for? Are we going to ditch on him for another 20 minutes? Because I got a couple other things that I wanted to cover on this.
Okay, well I wanted to play my clip real quick.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead and bring that up. We'll go ahead and play your clip.
So yeah, let me share the link here. Where is it? Okay, let me pull this up. Oh, by the way, just so that you know, in case you didn't know. Trick, if you have the tab that you want to share like highlighted, like ready to go, you know, if you got dual screens, it actually pulls it up right when you go to share it. Just saying. You know what I mean? I mean, you don't have to hunt for it if you got like 50 million tabs open like I did.
No, I don't have 50 million tabs up. I have a limited numbers because I don't like to live a complicated life here. Sorry.
You just blew it. What did I do with it? Now I can't find it. Hold on. Oh, there we go. Bye. Hold on.
All right. Oh, this is going to be wonderful. Right.
So now it will come right up. Here's your audio. Okay, I want you to listen to this. Okay, this is what Biden said today in his speech, where he's congratulating himself for such a great job that he did. Okay, go ahead and share it, and we'll play it.
There it is. Okay. Hold on. Okay.
There we go. All right, here we go. All right, I'm going to play. Here we go.
Oh, you had it good.
No, I don't want to see it.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
Here we go.
To fight ground war to do it. Where was called over the horizon capabilities?
First, yeah, over the horizon capabilities only applies. Well, we can launch B-52 bombers if we want to fly them 22 hours, you know, overnight, or do refillings of F-16s, or fly drones, okay, that only can loiter for 20 minutes. After we fly them over, we have no base there, but that's beside the point, okay? In other words, we don't have that hovering capability anymore. In other words, any intel we get on a suspected ISIS special K or whatever is already stale by the time the drone, by the time the bomber, by the time the fighter gets there, okay? It's already expired, okay? All right? But anyway. Let me just
tell you what he means by over-the-horizon capability. Over-horizon capability is meaning that for, let's say, an Apache helicopter, in order for it to fire at a target, you have to be able to see that target. In order to provide direct fire on that target, whether it's from the chain gun, the 20-millimeter gun, or to fire Hellfire missiles, you have to be able to see that target. You have to acquire it. Well, the over-the-horizon type technology, if you've ever seen these helicopters, they got that big old ball that sits on top of them. Have you seen some of these? Okay. That is your over the horizon technology, meaning that you don't have to be able to see those targets. What you are seeing, what the pilot can see in his display in front of him, is sent to a satellite or to some other type of aircraft, you know, that, you know, some type of AWACS or some type of drone that is showing him the image, so they don't have to see that target directly. They can look over the horizon and still engage that target with whatever type of weapon system that they're going to be firing on it.
So he's misapplying. Okay.
Oh yeah, this is a big time misapplication of that, because you're not going to have any helicopters in theater to do this, or drones in theater.
Think about flying an Apache, because we do have refueling capability mid-air on the Apaches now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Think about this. You're going to have these people, these two soldiers, pack into an Apache helicopter and fly them, you know, 12 hours every day. In other words, you're going to have to multiply the amount of troops, the amount of pilots, the amount of Apaches to do this, to just to have the hovering capability, not to mention the refueling. This is stupid. No, we don't have any bases. Pakistan has cut us off. Russia said, no, you're not doing that. Okay. I mean, seriously, the closest thing we have, okay, is the, right now it's the Ronald Reagan, okay, in the Gulf, okay, or Indian Ocean. I forget. There's like a transit point. But that's the closest we have, and that's 8-hour flights away. Not only that, but Pakistan is not, we have to fly over Pakistan or Iran just to get there. Pakistan, we're unsure of. Iran definitely ain't going to allow us to fly.
Yeah, no. And I don't think I would trust Pakistan to allow us to do that anyway.
We
would...
cannot use the bases that we developed for the past 20 years.
That's the part about it, yeah.
Oh, and Turkey, a NATO ally, is like, yeah, no, we don't think so, even though we got 70 nukes in there. But anyway, let me...
All right, let's go back. I'm sorry.
Let me get to the main point.
Okay, there we go.
Means we can strike terrorists and targets without American boots on the ground. Very few if needed.
Liar.
We've shown that capacity just the last week. We struck ISIS-K remotely, days after they murdered 13 of our service members, dozens of innocent Afghans.
I have noticed this. Whenever he says something really stupid, he always scratches his nose. That's no, he does. He does. It's
like
nuts.
That, right?
But let's take a look at what he says, okay? First of all, okay, we launch drones from where? From
Kabul.
Airport. That's where that drone. That's where those drones came from. Mm-hmm. And those drones can hover for a while if they're located close to the target. Okay. For instance, a drone launched from Afghanistan can hover for 18 hours. But if you're gonna fly that drone 18 hours from another base, Eric is looking at me skeptical. Is it 18 hours? I thought they had that capability.
I'm not sure. 18 hours seems a little bit long. But I'd have to look, but that
right,
seems,
yeah,
but even with that, that's still a lot of time on station,
exactly.
to get into the airspace.
Drone, but if you got to fly that drone 18 hours, 17 hours, how much time do you have to hover? You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cause you're expending all the fuel just getting there. And number one,
exactly.
These things aren't very fast, to begin with.
Exactly. So here's what he said. We struck ISIS-K targets. Well, first of all, they haven't released the names of the two people they originally struck, evidently, because they're not, you know, big targets. We don't even know who they were. They could have just been three dudes riding around on a jeep and got blown up. But one thing we do know for sure, they blew up this dude that evidently is looking like he was one of our interpreters. Now, maybe he flipped sides. I don't know. Okay? The guy that they struck in Kabul just recently. Okay? It's coming out. Okay? Al Jazeera's reporting it, but it's been picked up, and it's looking like it's legit. Okay? This is why I tell you. You got to listen to Al Jazeera. They actually do some really good terrorist reporting because they're embedded with the terrorists. So they do give you some good
God
information.
God bless you.
But anyway, but definitely what we did do... Let's say this guy was not working with us. Let's say this guy was not one of our interpreters. Let's say this guy, even if he was an interpreter, didn't flip. Let's say he really was an ISIS-K guy and his van was loaded with explosives and he was ready to go. We blew him up and we wiped out an entire family, including of 13, I believe, no, 10, I believe, including several children. You know what I mean? That's bad.
Is this the one that they lit up yesterday, the day before yesterday, in Kabul?
Yes. Yes. It turns out, and dude, a lot of media sources are reporting this guy was one of our guys that we were trying to get out. In other words, we're getting our intelligence from the Taliban, and the Taliban is like, yeah, go take this dude out because he's one of your interpreters, and we don't really care. Maybe he was smuggling out this whole family. We don't know. Okay? Or maybe he did flip. Maybe he went to ISIS-K because he's pissed off at Biden for banning his whole family. Either way, that's who we've killed so far. Two dudes that we don't know anything about. They haven't named the names. And wounded another guy. But we definitely know we killed 13, or no, not 13. I think it was 10 people of a family, including several children and 2-year-old girls. This is what he did, okay? This is what he's bragging about. No, this is the Biden plan. The Biden plan is the Obama plan. Obama killed more Muslims with drones, okay, than anybody else. This is the thing where Biden got killing Osama bin Laden wrong, where Obama actually got it right. Obama realized we need to send in, you know, Navy SEALs, we need to send in Rangers, we need to get the body, okay? We need to verify this. This is too important. We just can't send in. What do you call it?
Let me just say thank you to Dragon for coming today and moderating for us. All right, go ahead, Brad.
We can't just send drone strikes in. So Biden actually did get that right, except he should have displayed that body. He should have brought it to Capitol and put it on display in a very gruesome way. I'm just saying. But no. So the Biden plan, okay, is basically. Just to drone everybody, just to fire missiles willy-nilly, and we don't know who we're killing. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the danger of not having intel on the ground, is you don't know exactly.
Exactly.
And on top of that, you cannot confirm, you know, who you did kill and how many people
exactly.
were there. You rely on Al Jazeera to provide you that type of information on the ground. So
exactly. Seriously, we got this intel that this guy was going to do a suicide bombing. We got this intel from the Taliban. Okay? So we don't know who we killed. But there's more to this. Let me continue, Flager. I'm sorry. Keep interrupting.
No, that's all right. Here we go. Let me put it up. Go ahead.
To ISIS K, we are not done with you yet.
Do you hear that? ISIS K, we're not done with you yet. Okay,
trying to get the attention off of the Taliban and onto somebody else. This is ridiculous.
Hold on, no, keep it up. But okay, remember, he has ended. He said that I have ended our forever war. Okay, right? No, I didn't play that part because I wanted to chop it up, but that was, you know, 20 minutes before. I have ended our forever war. No more forever wars. But what is he saying to ISIS K? We're not done with you yet, right? Listen to this part. Listen to this.
Commander-in-Chief, I firmly believe the best path to guard our safety and our security lies in a tough, unforgiving, targeted, precise strategy that goes after terror where it is today, not where it was two decades ago.
Did you hear that? He's going tough against terror where it was. Where it is today, not where it was two decades ago. He just said that ISIS K, we're not done with you yet. Hello? Where is ISIS K? In the very place where terror was two decades ago.
Right.
Yeah.
The very place he just left.
Yeah.
He's doing diversion like everybody we know. He's diverting. I mean, instead of now looking at the Taliban, who are...
He is diverting, but no, someone should tell Sleepy Joe, former Vice President of the United States, demented Joe Biden, that guess what? The terrorists that you are killing today are in the same country today that were 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you just left. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can't come to me and tell me, we're going to kill them. We're going to fight the enemy. Basically, he's saying we're going to fight the enemy where the enemy is today as we retreat from in-country where the actual enemy is today. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, and the reason why I have a problem with this is because we hadn't had a soldier killed in Afghanistan in a year and a half.
Thanks to Trump.
Well, whoever you're crediting with that, it was, and here's why. It was because the mission had changed from direct combat, direct engagement by American forces in theater, to more of a supervisor role and a support role of the Afghan forces. This is why we didn't have the number of casualties that we were having 4 or 5 years ago over there, is because we were able to get enough soldiers on the ground or enough soldiers trained up in order to provide their own security, and then we support them. The problem is that, and this was already discussed. I was watching somebody on the news. It was the other morning or whatever it was. That the Afghanis, it looks like I'm lagging. So it was saying that the Afghanis weren't capable of supporting themselves and that they had become too dependent upon the United States in our role there with supplying them food, providing them logistical support, whether it's intelligence, whether it's some type of aerial cover or whatever. Something like that, you can wean them off of that. You can eventually get them to become less and less and less and less and less dependent upon you. And as they're doing that, they're gaining more and more and more and more confidence, not only in themselves, but the people around them are going to gain more confidence in them to provide an environment to where you would have a coalition government where the Taliban would not be able to make the incursions that they did have because the people within those – and that's the thing. When we pull the plug like you did, this is – and regardless of what the press, you know, credits would bite me with, in a few, I could care less. He pulled the plug, and he pulled the plug so quickly and to the point to where nobody had any confidence in whatever paper, whatever, you know, paper leader that they had over there. They had no confidence in that. And this is where you had even the president booked it out. I can almost guarantee you it goes back to closing Bagram in the middle of the frickin' night. What type of idiot does that? Does that not only to, well, yeah, not only, to, right, not only that to the Afghanis, but also to our allies. When you do, when the people see that, when the people saw that on the stage where we did that to our allies and we were willing to do that to our allies, all confidence collapsed in anybody over there.
Okay. Actually, we need to adopt the Chinese foreign policy or the Russian foreign policy. The Chinese foreign policy is actually the best. They don't give a damn. You can do whatever the hell you want to your own people. We're just going to build our port. We're going to develop a used, rundown port. This is what you don't understand. Eric, as a history, we discussed this, okay, a while ago, I think, briefly. Why didn't the Ottoman Empire colonize America? It is because the Portuguese were forced to develop a total infrastructure of ports because they shut off the Indian Ocean trade route, okay? So the Portuguese and the Spanish and the Europeans, they were looking for a destination to get to the spice trade. Mm-hmm. But what the Portuguese did, because they were going to Cape of Good Hope of South America, of Africa, well, they developed a port system, a trade system, okay, fortified ports, okay, military fortified ports around the entire African coast, from the west to the east, okay, all right, where the Ottomans didn't have that. They had the shipping, right, or they had the ships that could make the ocean trade, but they could not, but they had to come around, the Cape of Good Hope. They could not fortify, they could not resupply their armadas to do this. Well, that's what the Chinese have been doing for the past 20 years while we've been off in Afghanistan and Iraq. The Chinese have going around these, where we abandoned, not just us, but the UK and Europe, we abandoned these ports all around the world, these shipping, these trade routes, we abandoned them. We didn't keep them up in maintenance, we didn't develop them, whatever. Well, that's what they've gone to these African nations and South American nations, so on and so forth. And they said, you know what? Let us in. We'll take over your port system, and we'll develop it, and we'll make it into a major shipping area, okay, to resupply these, vessels. And guess what? We'll supply jobs.
Guess who?
You know
what I mean? Guess who has control of both sides of the Panama Canal?
China.
Exactly.
Canada, and that was
I know.
Right.
What'd you say? Carter gave it to him. No, it was Carter. No. Hold on a second. Carter signed a treaty in the 70s with the Panamanian government that we would turn over the canal by the year 2000. And the only thing we did was just follow through on that timeline.
But no, we should be managing it.
Well, there was, we built it, we ran it. And as a matter of fact, Panama, I mean, this, and Panama had to do this because they do not have a educational system within their country to support the number of engineers necessary in order to run the canal. You need engineers to do it. And they didn't have the ability to train engineers in the country. That's why they had to do it.
Think of how we developed Europe after World War II and how we neglected our own shores. We neglected South and Central America, dude.
Yeah,
okay?
I agree.
We totally neglected them. You keep looking at time.
And I just got a Skype from Chris. Evidently, Chris is going live at 6:30 for something. I don't know if he said what it was about or not. We'll find. I'll jump over there once we get done here. Okay. Okay. So the bottom line. Let's just make the conclusion here is that the decisions that have been made in order to get us out of theater, out of Afghanistan, are going to be felt for years. Leaving your own people back there is just, I mean, that's That's I mean, that right. I mean, that borders on criminality. I don't know how else you describe that. Incompetence? No, I don't. You know, these people that make these decisions, these four-star generals, these guys are not stupid people. These guys are some of our best educated people in our country. There's got to be something else there. I think it's political. I mean, I think he's pandering to the far left of his party, and he wanted to get out of there. Is tainted, and they said that this is the easiest avenue, the whole time, not realizing the ramifications of it.
What he's hoping for is that, well, no, they're already starting to spin it. Read that in my article that I posted. They're already starting to spin it. You can see that the coverage kind of changed in real time. Biden's going to, the leftist media are going to spin this, that Biden is a moral hero. He had the courage, and only he could do this. They actually said that in the article, only Biden could do this. Okay?
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah, anything to build that guy. we all know what empty suit that guy is. Everybody knows that. It's not hard to figure out. All right, folks. Thank you so much for coming by this evening and sharing your evening with us. Keep in mind, Sunday, Chris Claus will be hosting. I don't know what he's going to be talking about. Maybe I could drag that out of him tonight and get something out there quick. But he'll be hosting on Sunday, and we'll be back here on the Cross and the Crescent next Tuesday evening. Rad, Connie, and everybody else that participated in the chat. Thank you so much for coming and participating and sharing your ideas. All right, guys. God bless. We'll see you soon. Nisa, yes, coming up on camera now, right? Yeah. All right. Let me jump over here to Blog Talk Radio. Let me close this down. We'll see you peeps on the Blog Talk Radio.
Send me a link to Chris's thing, dude.